Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. I'm smiling because today's guest has heard me say this so many times. And this interview is about a community that he helped grow. You know, one of the coolest benefits of building a startup after you've built a community first is that you have people there to help you out. Your community members become your first subscribers, your first customers, your first supporters. And that's the path that today's guest took. Aaron Epstein first grew Color Lovers, a community for designers. Then he followed it up by launching Creative Market, an online marketplace where designers could sell their work directly to customers. We here at Mixergy have bought several of their web designs and used them for microsites and individual pages that we needed to explain new ideas that we were working on. The designs are beautiful, it's so easy to buy from them, and it's inexpensive, so we just buy. And you'll hear more about how he built up this marketplace here in this interview. This whole thing is sponsored by TopTal. Suppose you have an idea for a product, but your development team is too busy, so you don't have enough people to work on this new idea. What do you do? Do you just put it on the back burner? Not if you're a Mixergy fan. No, you want to go out there and find new designers, new developers, new people who will help build it up. Problem is that it takes forever to do it, and often you don't know if you find the right person until a month, two, maybe even 3 months down the road, and by then it feels very painful. So here's an alternative. Go to TopTal.com. TopTal is a network of top developers, top people, in fact, top 3% among their peers. They've screened them, they've tested them, they've made sure their people are top-notch. So you tell TopTal what you're looking for, they will find you the right cultural fit, the right person who has the right development skills for you. They'll match you up, you have a conversation, and if you like them, you work with them often the very next day. Go to TopTal.com. I was going to say I guarantee you'll love it, but no, they guarantee you'll love it. In fact, ask them about that when you talk to them. TopTal.com. And don't say that you heard an ad for them here on Mixergy, even though that's how you found out about them. Tell them you're friends of Andrew's from Mixergy. They'll take really good care of you. I know them very well. TopTal, thanks for sponsoring Mixergy. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, I mentioned that you were that you've listened to Mixergy a lot. In fact, before we started, you told me about your Y Combinator days. Where you were listening to Mixergy back then?
Absolutely. So besides spending about 24 hours a day working on Color Lovers at the time, we also would spend a lot of time dialing into your podcasts every single day. It was awesome to hear the regular advice that you had. And, you know, in addition to all the advice that we were getting throughout Y Combinator, that was really awesome to hear too. And learned a lot from that as we were going through that program.
That's so cool for me to know that you're listening. You are the kind of person that I aspire to have in the audience. Someone who's really building things, someone who's creating something that's having dramatic influence on businesses like mine. And you're the kind of person who's hard to reach and hard to create a good interview for. And that's why we have a research team. And that's why we do so much work to get these interviews out. I mentioned that you built a community, but the community was something that was already there. You partnered up with the people who created it. And what you built that you brought into that partnership was software. What was the software that you created?
Yeah, so when I was in college about 15 years ago, my freshman year, I had a web design company with some friends. And a lot of times clients would give us their logo as a starting point for a website. And that logo typically had one color in it. And so we would take that client logo and have to build a website and figure out what harmonious colors would go with that. And so after, you know, tinkering around in Photoshop forever to try to find colors that matched, I thought to myself, there must be a way to just give a tool a base color and have it tell me what colors go well with that. And so I couldn't find anything at the time, this was 1999, that would just give me harmonious colors. And so I went and did the research on the color theory and I actually just built it myself. And I called that Color Schemer, and it was a web-based tool. And eventually created some downloadable desktop software for PC and started selling that. And so I was making some nice spending cash as a college student, which was pretty cool. I actually spent my spring break coding it up while, you know, a lot of other kids were out in Mexico or something like that. And got it to the point when I graduated, I was like, all right, I'm going to see what I can do with this. And so it was just me for a number of years building and designing, developing, marketing, handling customer support around the Color Schemer software. And I did that for a number of years by myself. And eventually I just got bored. Everything was so automated where I was making money in my sleep. People would just pay online to unlock the trial. And eventually got connected with Darius and Chris, who had started Color Lovers in around 2005 also. So they had this great community. I had this great software. And we got together and we decided to merge our two businesses together since we were both big players in the color space. And so we did that in the middle of 2009, and that's how we went to go on to focus on Color Lovers.
So I always thought that what the colors that match were up to the designer, that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and so you as the designer are getting paid to figure out what goes well with what.
Yeah,
but that's not the way. That's not the way you saw it.
Well, so there is that, but at the same time, there's color theory that has been studied and established over really decades of research around what colors go well together, which are harmonious. And so I wanted to look for something that was a really good starting point that would take a lot of the guesswork out of the way I and many other designers were doing things at the time. So the software did that. You know, if you were looking for something to just tell you, tell you what went well together, then Color Schemer would do that. That was actually the really nice thing about partnering with Darius and Chris on Color Lovers, because they kind of had the opposite approach. Rather than giving it a base color and, you know, it spits out a bunch of colors that go well with this, they actually had this community that they had started where people were creating their own five color palettes and sharing them with each other. So if you were more into just looking for inspiration and finding pre-made palettes that would work really well for you, then Color Lovers is great for that. If you just kind of wanted to be told, you know, we actually had a lot of people that were colorblind that really relied on Color Schemer to find matching color palettes. So if you just wanted to be told what went well together and, you know, move on to the next thing in your project, Color Schemer was great for that.
You said you did it over spring break. Were you the kind of person who would work throughout college, or were you social back then?
So I was social, but I really found my passion in building products. Mm-hmm. And actually at a very young age, I grew up on the internet, so I'm 33 now. I remember 94, 95 learning to make websites before, you know, the image tag was a thing in HTML. So I go way back there. But what I loved about it was because I grew up on the internet and grew up making websites, I found that I could actually make websites much better than, say, Coca-Cola could make a website, right? These major big players. So I couldn't make a car as good as Ford could make a car, but I could make a website as good as anybody else in the world. And so that was really exciting to me to have that power to create something out of nothing. And that's why I love spending, you know, endless hours working on it, even over spring break when I had a lot of spare time and wasn't in school or hanging out with friends.
How much money did you make with Color Schemer?
So a Color Schemer, when I was in college, I think I was making about $1,400 a month when I graduated.
Wow, okay.
Which, you know, it's not really enough to live on. Well, it is as a college student, but it's great spending money as a college student. So I never had to hit up my parents for money, so that was great. They certainly appreciated that. But when I graduated, you know, I was making $1,400 a month, and I said, all right, I'm going to see what I can do with this. And so I focused all my time on making upgrades to the software, building out a Mac version, things like that, and eventually got it up to months where I was making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in a month. And it was largely automated, where the only responsibilities that I had ongoing were handling customer support, which was really important to me, or building out new versions of the software. So did that for probably 9 years.
How did you get it to do that much revenue? What was the change after college that allowed you to grow so much?
So when I was in college, I had a this downloadable PC-only version that I sold for $25. And it worked, but it wasn't kind of my full vision with all the tools that I wanted to add to make it more powerful. And so what I actually did was I created a new version that was called Color Schemer Studio because I had made the mistake with the original Color Schemer software of offering free lifetime upgrades for customers, which actually turns out to be a bad idea for them because there's no incentive on the developer's part to continue improving them. So I made this much more advanced version of the software called Color Schemer Studio, and I priced it at $49, up from the $24.99 that I was charging. And I actually kept selling them both. And I used the $24.99 one as kind of an anchor point to prove the value of the $49 one. And so when I launched that, I had this mailing list of all these people that had bought my software or signed up through the web-based tool that I had put together in 1999 to be notified of any updates to the product or the software. And so I was able to send out an email to all those people to let them know. And then I even offered a 30% upgrade discount for anybody that had bought the previous version of the software. So right off the bat, you know, I went from making $1,400 a month to, I think, $6,000 a month just by launching this new software and offering upgrades to customers that had already purchased.
I see an old version of the site here from 2005. It's colorschemer.com, the ultimate color tools. With tools from Color Schemer, creating harmonious color schemes has never been easier. Instantly match colors, find harmonies, and learn about color theory, all while building your own dazzling color schemes. And you've got a forum. How active were the forums, and how helpful were they in getting sales?
So they actually weren't that helpful on the Color Schemer side of things. But they were a major driver on the Color Lovers community side of things for people to interact. The biggest drivers were I would do web-based ads or word of mouth. And like I said, support was really important to me. So anybody that wrote in got a reply usually within an hour. And, you know, I try to be super helpful, super friendly, bending over backwards to help people out. Because word of mouth was so important, and I knew that if they had a great experience, they would go tell their friends, and their friends would then buy it too.
So you were doing, you were getting profits. You were doing $10,000 to $20,000 a month, I think you said. Do I have that right?
Yep.
What did Chris and Darius bring to the business partnership?
A lot. So I consider myself a jack of all trades and a master of none. You know, here I was for 9 years doing every facet of this business, from coding to designing to marketing to customer support to business strategy, all that stuff. But these guys were really A players that had built something in a similar space. And it's kind of funny, you know, we got together to talk about merging up, and we actually discovered how similar we were. You know, Darius, his birthday is 1 month apart from mine. He went out when he was doing some fundraising for Color Lovers, spent some time in New York City, crashing at my place, and went out to dinner with my wife one night. And then they came back and my wife said, "That was really weird. It was like talking to you with a different head and body." So it's kind of funny. We just connected because we, you know, we fell into these color products that we were building. But we were actually very similar and had a lot of the same passions and goals. And then Chris is just, you know, one of the best developers I've ever known. And he's a great leader on our development team to this day. But he, you know, goes so much deeper in his depth of technical knowledge and building a site. The Color Lovers community, you know, grew up to, say, 15 million page views a month and a couple million members. And Chris single-handedly built and scaled the site that supported all of that.
Was their business generating profits at that point?
So they sold ads through the Color Lovers community. You know, I was making probably a similar amount of money selling the Color Schemer software. But when we merged up, we knew that that what we were currently doing wasn't the big scalable business that we wanted to build. And so it was actually summer of 2009 when we ended up merging up. And, you know, for me, I was bored with the Color Schemer stuff that I was doing and was looking for that new big opportunity. And so when we connected, I knew instantly, like, this is what I wanted to do. And so shortly afterwards, I was living in the DC area at the time. We had a townhouse there that I had bought. And my wife got a job up in New York City at the Food Network. And so because I could work anywhere, I just kind of followed her wherever she went. And so we were trying to rent out our place in the DC area, and we were trying to find a place to live in New York. And I get this text from Darius, and he had gone to startup school and talked to Paul Graham there. And Paul Graham said, "I love Color Lovers. You guys should apply to YC." And so at the time we thought, well, you know, isn't that just for a couple kids out of college and with an idea? And here we've had these businesses we've been running for a little while that are making money and seem like not the right demo. And he said, just apply. And so Darius sends me this text: "If we could do Y Combinator, would you want to do it?" And I was like, oh, I got to rent out my place in DC. I got to find a place to live in New York. I've got about a month to do this. And I said, screw it, let's do it. because, you know, it's not every day that opportunity knocks like that, and you got to be able to open the door. So found a place to live in New York, found renters in D.C. The week after Christmas, I moved my wife up to New York City into our apartment, and I spent a week there, and then I said, okay, I'll see you in 4 months. And I flew out to the West Coast to live with Darius and Chris and do Y Combinator for a few months. And, you know, by far, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
And you're still here.
And I'm still here.
Still here. And the wife?
And the wife moved out here, too.
Wow, way to go.
After Y Combinator, I moved back to New York City, and we lived there for a few years. And we continued building the team remotely because that's sort of how we started. Darius and Chris were on the West Coast. I was on the East Coast. So we just scaled like that. And now, you know, I'm back out here on the West Coast. And it's the first time we've moved from my job. So that's been fun for my wife.
By the way, you're on a Mac, right?
Yes.
I'm hearing every time one of your friends joins Skype or logs in for the day that we're hearing some kind of bubbly noise. All you have to do is go to the top of your screen to the menu bar, click on the bubble that I guess is a green bubble, and turn it to the red bubble, which is Do Not Disturb. Great.
There we go.
Yeah. You must have an older version of Skype. The newer ones don't make that noise anymore.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, I used to actually have to tell every interviewee before we started, please go to Do Not Disturb.
Yeah.
So you apply to Y Combinator. What was it, just easy for you to get in? What was the meeting like? What was the evaluation like?
Yeah, so it's a 10-minute interview, as you know, probably. And you go in there, and for us, it was just the four original partners. Now YC has scaled much beyond that. But it was just kind of a rapid fire, what could this be, back and forth kind of thing. I think we probably were in a unique situation because obviously we had already had these businesses that we were running. And so for us, we focused our time during Y Combinator trying to figure out what's the big scalable business that we think we can turn this into. And so our interview was basically 10 minutes of back and forth on, well, what if we did something like this? Or could it be something like this? And then, you know, we kind of give our take on that and offer up some other ideas on what we thought it could be. And it was just a lot of back and forth like that. And I think through that process, they're able to discover how much the founders know each other, how well they relate to each other, if it's the kind of people that, you know, Y Combinator wants to associate with. And so fortunately, you know, they made us an offer to join that night.
And this was for color lovers. They were investing in that business. Now, I remember in the past, I'd interview Y Combinator entrepreneurs, and they'd say that in the meeting, Paul Graham would help them think through what their business was going to be. I think that's what happened with the WooFoo team.
Yep.
For you, it wasn't like that. They just accepted that you're smart thinkers, that you get along with each other, that you know each other well enough, and that you could figure things out. You got in with Color Lovers. At some point, you changed. What got you to change direction and leave Color Lovers behind?
Yeah, so while we were in Color Lovers, while we were in Y Combinator with Color Lovers, we actually relaunched the site to version 4, actually, it was. So it had been around that long. And Paul Graham kind of had this vision at the time that Color Lovers could change the way the world looks, is how he described it. And so we actually partnered with a bunch of pattern and textile manufacturers. And here we had all these palettes and patterns and shapes and things like that that people were creating. And so we actually made it so you could click a button and order that pattern that you saw on the site as fabric or as wall art or things like that. So we saw this potential opportunity there. We also at the time thought that what our business might be could be this big color data company. So if you're familiar with a company like Pantone, they typically are the, you know, the world's color experts, where they get a couple people in a room every year, and then they say, okay, the color of the year next year is going to be fuchsia. And because they declared that, they then put out their trend report that goes to all the same industries. Those industries take it. They say, oh, the color of the year is fuchsia. We better start, you know, incorporating that color into all of our product lines. And it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy where they're actually always right. But everybody's operating off of the same data there. So what we had was tons of color palettes and patterns and people loving them, interacting with them, faving them, sharing them. And so what what we envisioned we could do is actually put together like a real-time color trends graph or database that we pair up with demographics. And so if you're Microsoft rebranding the Xbox, you want to know what colors 18 to 24-year-old males are trending now, we could give you a front end to all of the data that we had. So that was one idea. And then the other idea was the marketplace. And we were kind of torn going back and forth between each of those ideas until something happened, I think it was around November of 2010, where MetLife reached out to us because there was a pattern on the Color Lovers site that they had seen that they wanted to use for their Thanksgiving display to wrap two floors of their building across from Bryant Park in New York City. And so they wanted to pay $250 for this. And so the light bulb went off in our heads where we said, here's somebody who's just playing around, having fun on the site, spending their free time there. And they've actually created this pattern and content that another business finds really valuable and is willing to pay $250 for. And so we actually did that deal. We took the $250. We gave it directly to the member that had created it. And that was what set us on the path, thinking that Marketplace was really going to be the way to go. And so we started building a marketplace around the Color Lovers community and thinking we were going to build tools where people could actually just, you know, play around on the site, have fun, build content, and then offer it for sale. And then we actually ended up realizing it's actually much bigger than that, the types of creative content that people want to buy.
It's not just colors and palettes.
It's not just colors and palettes and shapes. There's fonts, there's website themes, there's photos, there's Photoshop files and graphics and illustrations and all sorts of things. And so that's what led us to spin off Creative Market as its own separate site.
So I'm actually looking at what the site looked like in 2010. And I should say that for anyone who's not a designer, this just feels like complete geeking out on something that just we would never even know was important. I'm looking at one page here that's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stripes of different colors in a rectangular box. That is what people are rating, and I see a bunch of people rating stuff like that. I see someone else who's got Love Plaid, and that person is called My Fantasy Realm, and people are hearting it. Someone hearted that, and then there's a whole design. That's the stuff that you're talking about, and that's why you said, if people are buying this, this is interesting, but it's not big enough. We want to go much bigger. But you did start selling the patterns on colorlovers.com at first?
No, we actually never did. We started building a marketplace on top of the Color Lovers community. And then partway through, we realized, you know, we're going through all these different things, like our Color Lovers user accounts going to be the things that people use to buy. And it was tricky because we had over 1 million members on Color Lovers at the time. And there were so many people that just loved and, you know, knew about the community, loved spending time there. A lot of people had their best friends were on the site. You know, they're meeting people through the site. And the Color Lovers community was actually nominated for a Webby Award for Best Community 5 years in a row, which is a pretty great honor. So we had built this great community. But
you know, before I know where you're going with this, you're about to start talking about Creative Market, and I'd like to, but I have to stop and ask you about that. What did you guys do to build such a great community in an environment where people, I don't think, are very trusting of communities or companies or I know they're not trusting of outsiders. I couldn't come in and create a community of designers. So what did you guys do to foster this community?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that we did was just being engaged. When there's a platform for people to interact with each other, and then they see that the creators of that platform are also engaged, then that just goes so far for making that a place where people want to hang out and belong. So there's that, but also just kind of the inherent nature of Color Lovers was it was a place for people to express themselves. You know, you think about like the real name debate on something like Google+. You know, we didn't require people's real names. They could come on here, and the simple act of picking out 5 colors that go with each other and call that a palette was just something that anybody could do. So there's something very inclusive about the community that we had built where everyone really felt like comfortable expressing themselves, comfortable creating art, and comfortable being a part of it.
Y Combinator has Hacker News, an incredible community of entrepreneurs and coders. I remember interviewing early Hacker News users about why they participated, and they said, you know, what got us really in there is things like Paul Graham said that he, the founder of Y Combinator, that he would pay attention to who was most active and what they said. That if you were, I think if you were a top member, you might be invited into Y Combinator for a meeting, which was pretty interesting. It was stuff like that that got people involved. What allowed those early people to bring even more people in is, I remember I used to post Mixergy interviews on there, and I'd want others to vote on them so that they would go up higher. And every time I do an interview, I'd say, and if you like this, go vote for it on Hacker News. So I was encouraging more users. Did you do things like that to bring people into the community? Did you do things that got them to be more active in the community? What did you do more actively than what you've said so far?
Yeah, so I mean, the biggest thing is giving people ownership, I think, is what you're describing. We took feedback from the community very seriously, and all of our communications to them was all about, this is your community. You know, we're building the community for you. It's not our community. And so,
you know what, Aaron, I see a lot of people do that and then nobody cares. Thanks for giving me my community. I have my community on Facebook. I have my community on Slack, on tons of other places. But I know that there's some tools here that helped that helped create more of a community. Maybe it was the palette rating and I'd want my palette to get more ratings. Maybe it was the ease of harding it. Maybe it was the way that you allowed people to share the palette by embedding it on their site. I'm not sure. What else is there that encouraged more activity in the community?
Yeah. So the biggest thing is, you know, Facebook has liking and Color Lovers has loving. You love a palette. And that's not, you know, we even have likings today on Creative Market where people post products. And so, for example, somebody may not have a sale, but somebody came and liked their product. And so it's that feedback cycle, that appreciation loop, where you've taken the time to create this work of art, which, you know, for Color Lovers was putting 5 colors next to each other and creating a unique palette. And then somebody else came and they loved it and they gave that feedback. And then all of a sudden, you know, you feel appreciated, you feel rewarded for the work that you're putting in, and you want to come back and continue to create more and continue to be a part of the community. So Color Lovers members, there were really 2 types of members. There were the professional people that were coming because, you know, I'm working on a project for a client, I need a color palette, so I go over here and I just search for whatever the top rated palette is and I find something great, and then I pull those color codes back into Photoshop or wherever it is that I'm designing. Then there were the other people that really were the more active content creators, and they were the ones that were spending hours a day on the site, had their friends on the site, were really engaged and really driven by a lot of that feedback loop that was created when somebody loved your palette or commented on it or left you a note.
Okay, so you decide you're going to create a new site. Creative Market is a great name for it. What did you guys pay to get that domain, creativemarket.com?
Yes.
I actually have it here in front of me. I often ask questions that I know the answer to so that I could hear it from you.
Oh, I didn't even know that was out there.
I'm going to guess $1,250.
You would be correct, yes.
All right.
Yeah,
that's a damn good price.
Yeah.
You just went onto a marketplace and bought it.
No, so I think it was a company that had it, and they weren't really doing anything with it. They were just kind of redirecting it to another one of their sites. And so we reached out to them. Obviously not using any of our domains that we already had in existence. And at first they wanted $1,500 for it, and we got them down to $1,250 and we called it a day. So
I think it was iwmarketing.com is the site that had it at the time. So you bought it from them. It's now not enough to have done to just get the domain. You put up a landing page. Everybody puts up a landing page, but you created the secret post that you gave me access to, where you talk about what you did to promote it and you say, here's our landing page and why it works so much better than other people. Can you describe what it looked like and why it worked?
Yep. So we had this teaser page that we put out because obviously when you're building a marketplace, it's really difficult because you have this chicken and egg scenario. Nobody wants to sell on your marketplace unless there are people that are coming there to buy, and nobody's going to come there to buy unless there are actually products that people are selling. So what we had to do was try to build up the buyer side of the marketplace by getting people involved early on and getting them to come join Creative Market before we'd even launched it. So we built this teaser page. And what we did is we offered $5 in free credit to anybody that came and put in their email address prior to our launch. And so we did that. And then once you put in your email address, it gave you kind of this viral referrer page, was the only other thing that was visible on the site. So you put in your email address, you sign up for the site, you get $5 free credits, and then it says, hey, share this with your friends and you can earn even more money to spend when we open the doors. And so we actually had different tiers. So if you refer 10 friends and they come join, then you get 10 more dollars. So on until...
Give it names. It's actually, I'm looking at the supporter level, 5 referrers gets you 10 bucks. The ambassador level means that you've referred 20 people, you get 30 bucks. VIP is the title you get if you refer 50 people, and that entitles you to $200 in creative credit money to spend on work on there. That's incredibly smart, but it's dangerous too. If you're handing out 200 bucks that you then have to use to pay for people, I mean, it's not coming out of thin air. It's not that you eventually have to give that money to the designers, right?
Yep. Yeah. So we had raised about $1 million in funding at this point. And to be honest, it was nerve-wracking putting this live. We actually had a lot of people that ended up referring 50 or more people, which was, you know, $200 in creative market credits you'd have to spend. And so it felt kind of risky, but at the same time, it felt like something that we had to do. It was really a powerful way to drive new signups. And, you know, it really worked because come launch day, in addition to a couple other things that we did, we actually had 70,000 people that were signed up over just a few months of this viral teaser page being live.
What else did you do that helped you get 70,000 people?
Yep. So the other thing that we did is we had this page that we put together that was called Free Goods. And so we're thinking about it and we're like, what are something that our target customers would be interested in that we could give them for free now so that when we launch later, you know, we'll have their email addresses and user accounts so we can start marketing to them. We'd found that the email marketing worked really well in the early days of Color Schemer. And so we had a feeling that this was going to be a big path for us for Creative Market as well. So we put together this free goods page where we reached out to a lot of people that were creating content on other sites or on their own sites. And we said, hey, if you want to make something, offer it up for free to Creative Market users, then we'll give you more exposure. You'll be one of the first shops to sell when we open the doors to thousands of potential customers. And so that was actually how we initially started seeding the seller side of the marketplace too. So we got actually 30 different products from various content creators, fonts and WordPress themes and things like that. And we put them all together on a page, and you could download them all entirely for free. You just had to sign up to Creative Market in order to do it. And oh, by the way, you also got $5 in free credits to spend when we opened the doors. So those two things combined, the viral referrer program and the free goods page, were the biggest drivers of new users before we even had a website.
You know, you still do that to this day. So we have an account, we have a company account. But in preparation for this interview, I was checking out your site again, and I hit the join button, which is easy because I just had to click the Facebook button. But I remember seeing I get something for free. Now, the day that paying, what is it, like 10, 20, 30 bucks, whatever it is for your design, the day that that becomes so pressing for Mixergy that I need it free is the day we're close to shutting down. We're gig-oming the business. But I still got excited about it. I said, great, I can't believe I signed up and I got this stuff. I can't wait to go back after this interview to go see what I got for free. It's amazing how powerful it is. Because you've got a price tag on all the other content, when I get some of it for free, I get excited.
Yep, it's actually really funny because we send out a few weekly marketing emails when people join the site. And we actually will get emails to our support staff whenever, if an email accidentally ends up in somebody's spam folder or something like that, they'll say, hey, where's my email this week? I didn't get, you know, the new free goods this week or the new products that are released on Creative Market this week. And the reason why is I think people actually see those as really inspirational. And that's probably the biggest thing that I've learned over the years around email marketing is if you make the content actually useful and inspirational to the people that receive it, they'll want to receive it. They won't think you're sending me spam or you're just marketing to me. It's the types of things where people actually want to see that every week and click through to it and come back to the site, and it increases engagement a lot.
Aaron, you said something else. You were a little worried about giving out so much money or so many credits to people, but not incredibly scared of it because you'd already raised $1 million. How do you raise $1 million for a product that you hadn't even launched? All you have is a really clever viral landing page. What is it about your idea that got investors to say, sure, we'll pony up and you figure it out later?
So following Y Combinator, we got out at the end of 2010. And to be honest, going into Y Combinator, we weren't even thinking of raising more money. Here we had been making money and, you know, we were profitable all this time. And so we thought, we don't even really need to raise money. We're just going to use this as a kind of a springboard for us. As we got closer to Demo Day in Y Combinator, we realized the opportunity that was in front of us to build something bigger and to pitch a lot of top-level investors. And so we decided we were going to raise money. And so we went out after Y Combinator, and we were actually more focused at this time on building the color data company. And we had a tough time raising around that because investors just weren't as excited about it. And then once we made the switch that we were going to build a marketplace, then all of a sudden those same investors actually became really excited because they'd seen the community that we had built. They knew that we could build this consumer platform, and we had de-risked a lot of the potential investment there, and they obviously saw a much larger opportunity in building the marketplace versus building this color data company. So really, it was on everything that we had built prior and our track record coming out of Y Combinator, and then the vision for the business that we wanted to build, and the investors seeing that as a really big opportunity.
I'm looking at a TechCrunch article from May 3rd, 2011 about the $1 million raise. It says, Color Lovers raises $1 million to make everyone an artist. They were under the impression that that's what you were going to do. I'm assuming that's what you said to the world, that we are going to make Colored Lovers into a site that more people are part of. But I'm looking at your investor list, people like Alexis Ohanian, Matt Mullenweg, Dharmesh Shah, who seems to be investing in so many of the hit companies. You told them the future really is going to be a marketplace. This is what we're going to do, transition some of the people who are in our community to this marketplace where they could make money and then bring in others to buy. I see.
Yep. So it was tricky at that time because we hadn't fully launched Creative Market, but a lot of people knew Color Lovers. And so we had raised this money, and it's not as much of a PR story if you say Creative Market raises $1 million and everybody says, who's Creative Market? If you say Color Lovers raises $1 million, then all of a sudden that resonates with people a lot more and there's a frame of reference for what we're building. It was interesting because we had raised this money and the investors obviously knew what we were building. But the core kind of in that headline was everything that we were doing with Creative Market was to make design simple and accessible to everybody. And so Color Lovers, you know, touched on that at a basic level around color and patterns. But that's really what Creative Market was built around from a consumer perspective, is just making all this great content, just a couple bucks, and instantly you look like a rock star designer.
I'm looking at the comments. That's why I'm smiling as you're talking. The comments are from people like Miha Baldwin, Dan Martell, Jeff Slabotsky, Ted Reingold of Dogster, and so many others. All these people are really well known in the tech community and really smart entrepreneurs. They are commenting about how excited they are about this company. Bubs is one of my favorite people in the world, says Miha, talking about Darius. Dan Martell is also a big fan of Darius. Rob Lefebvre is a fan of Bubs. That's the power of having this community that I said at the top.
Yep, absolutely.
Meanwhile, by the way, everyone loves Bubs. I don't see a single person say, I love Aaron.
Bubs was the CEO, and he was the one doing the fundraise, and he was the one connecting with a lot of these people. Bubs, or Darius, as we called him, and I had a lot in common, but we also complemented each other in a lot of ways, too. And so the way we structured the company was he did a lot of the external fundraising partnerships, and you know, he's just an incredible CEO and fundraiser. And if you haven't read it, you should go read his post on TechCrunch about fundraising, which was kind of like a Bible a couple of years back when he published it for a lot of startups that were trying to raise money. So you know, he's exceptional and a great co-founder, and that's why you know, very fortunate to have the team that we did, which made all of this possible.
I think he also has that cool name. Like anyone who's known as Bubs online, I just want to use that word all the time. John Crawford, he's a guy who from Store Envy, who I interviewed here on Mixergy, he in the comments, first of all, the fact that he joined the comments to add his anything to TechCrunch article is interesting, but he in the comments mentioned you. And it's really interesting to see the kind of passion that you get for this community, that you tell Paul Graham, I'm with Color Lovers, and he says, I love Color Lovers, and he's essentially recruiting you guys for Y Combinator, is a really big, strong statement about the community that you guys built. All right, you've got this whole thing set up. You don't have a chicken and egg problem anymore because you got tons of eggs. You got tons of people who are waiting, or I don't know, or tons of chickens. You have tons of people who are waiting to buy from this marketplace. Many of them have cash. How hard was it to get the designers, the artists to join the community?
It wasn't hard because the way we were trying to do it was scaling up both the buyer and seller side at the same time. Mm-hmm. So in the early days when we're launching, we didn't necessarily want 100,000 people selling on the platform, because if we had 100,000 people selling and only 70,000 people buying, mm-hmm. then that means, you know, a lot of those sellers are not going to get sales and they're not going to feel good about being a part of the platform. So what we did is we had that initial group that was making the free goods pre-launch for us. And so we reached out to them and to more people like them, and we gave them early access before we launched, so they could set up their stores and start uploading their products for sale and things like that. So I think we probably had just a couple hundred sellers when we first launched, but the value proposition to them was not, hey, you're going to make $1 million on day one. A lot of them had participated in other marketplaces and they were starting to feel drowned out by them because there were so many people creating products for sale. It was really hard to get that exposure that they were looking for. And so we came to them with this pitch of, we've got this brand new marketplace that isn't filled with a ton of people, you know, selling a lot of random products, some of it a lot of crap on other marketplaces that they felt devalued their own work. And so we said, if you get in early before we launch, then, you know, we're going to promote the heck out of you guys because there's nobody else to promote and you're doing great work. So it just meant more exposure for them, for the ones that were willing to take a shot on us really early on before we had launched.
So that's something that I've heard a lot in my interviews. And I think the first time I asked about the chicken and egg problem was to Jason Fried. And he said, if I remember right, focus on the part that's hardest, or focus on one and then the other. And in your case, by focusing on the buyers, it was much easier to recruit the sellers. The other thing I was going to ask you is, what about big marketplaces like Envato Market, where there were places to sell themes, PSD files, etc.? And what a great answer to that. You already beat me to it. You said, you went to those people who you wanted to sell and say, you don't want to be in the big marketplace because you'll get drowned out. Be in our place. It's smaller, more exclusive, and we'll help promote you.
So it wasn't just that, too. You know, we're not obviously the first marketplace to sell digital design assets, but everything we do is very different. And our mission for the seller side is to empower independent creators to make a living doing what they love. So this is what we had discovered on Color Lovers. There are people spending a lot of time doing what they love. And so now how can we transition that to help them make money off of just following their passions? And so everything that we set up in the early days, the terms of the marketplace, was built to support that mission. And so what that meant was everybody gets a 70-30 split. So they get the 70%. On a lot of those other marketplaces, if you're exclusive or not exclusive or whatever, then you can oftentimes get less than 50% of each sale when you're the one who spent all the time and energy and hard work to make the product in the first place. We fundamentally felt like that wasn't fair. And so 70-30 split for everybody. You didn't have to be exclusive with us. You could sell on your own website. You could sell on another website. It was up to us to prove that we were the best platform for you to sell. The other thing is, we didn't review on a per product basis. Instead, we reviewed on a per shop basis. So you think about Rovio, they sell Angry Birds in the App Store. They put out the first Angry Birds, it's a massive hit, and then they want to put out Angry Birds Seasons and Angry Birds Star Wars, and Apple still puts them through this review process for every app. Our approach is, let's just approve Rovio because they make great stuff, and now everything that they want to sell going forward goes live instantly because we know that they're really great. So we approve people to open a shop, and then they can upload their products and they go live instantly. They can set their own prices. They can change prices instantly to do A/B tests and feedback or run sales or whatever they want to do. So really it was all about giving the creators more control over the products that they were selling, which was something that was just completely 180 degrees from all the other marketplaces that were out there.
I mentioned that you got, I mentioned at the top of the interview that it was because you had all this, this huge community that they became your first subscribers, your first customers, and I also said your first supporters. Now, I gave a couple of examples about how Miha Baldwin and others are supporting you in the comments of a TechCrunch feed, but it's more than that. What, how else did your community support you in the early days and help you get going?
The community within the buyers and sellers, or the community
Color Lovers, this community of artists who'd known you because they've been a part of Color Lovers, or known you and respected you because of the work you've done there.
Yep. Well, first of all, on that teaser page, before we even launched Creative Market, we said from the creators of Color Lovers on there. So we used it as a way to establish credibility with people in the design space that were already familiar with us. The other thing is we actually use Color Lovers to market Creative Market. So we had emails that we would send to the Color Lovers community. We had ad spots and integrations and things like that that we would do to let the Color Lovers community know, hey, we've got this marketplace that is either coming soon or has just launched. And so we were able to actually get a lot of people to move over from Color Lovers and create accounts on Creative Market because we had this credibility and because we were able to market to them.
But did they support you in any other way by maybe writing more articles about you, by talking about you in ways that others hadn't gotten conversation? What else did they do? And if they didn't, it's totally fine if what they did so far that I've discussed is all they did.
Yep. No, so that was another thing is because we had been in the design space for such a long time, we had a lot of contacts and connections at a lot of the most popular design blogs and design writers. That made it easier for us to help spread the word. So we used our connections there, whereas if we were just trying to launch Creative Market, this marketplace with no track record and no history and a brand new industry for us, it would have been much more difficult. So we had that. A lot of the names that you mentioned that were commenting on that TechCrunch post, those were startup friends from within the Bay Area that, like you mentioned, are really well connected. And so for those guys to feel positively about what we were building and excited about it, they help, you know, pass that word along within the investor community and within the startup community, which helped get a lot of people excited about what we were building too.
So we talked about the fear of credits eating up all your revenue and or all of the cash that you'd got from investors. It, according to my notes here, you got within a few days $3,000 in sales. 2,000 of them were credit sales. 1,000 of those sales came in cash. So not bad. A lot of people you said to our pre-interviewer didn't even redeem their credits. What percentage of the credits that you gave out were redeemed in, say, the first year?
So I don't have that number offhand, but just to give an anecdote, you know, if we're giving away $5 to every single person who signed up before launch and we had 70,000 people sign up, that's a potential liability of $350,000 right there. And so that's what was nerve-wracking. You know, it's exciting to be able to send that email on launch day that says, hey, remember that $5 in free credits that we gave you, or even more if you actually invited other friends to come join? Well, now we're live and you can come spend that free money. And so we're thinking, who wouldn't want to do that? You know, who wouldn't come back to the site to spend that money? So with this $350,000 liability, we send out that email to everybody in the community. And day one, we had $3,000 in sales. So, you know, we didn't know before we did that if we were going to have $300,000 in sales on day one and burn through all of our money and then we'd be in trouble, or if, you know, things would go slower. And we actually found that giving away the free credits beforehand was a great tool to get people to come sign up, but it brought them back to the site, but ultimately it didn't hurt us or put us in the hole as far as increasing our burn and having to go raise a lot more money.
So those numbers were from the first day. I would have expected even more than 3,000 people, more than $3,000. Yep. You did too.
Yep.
Why do you think it was so low?
It's tough to say. It was obviously day one, and we had so much to learn about the product we were building and the community that we were serving. So part of it is, you know, we only had a couple hundred products altogether. So just because you have $5 free to spend doesn't necessarily mean you're going to find the exact thing that you're looking for. So now we're up to, I think, like 180,000 products within the marketplace, and it's much more likely that you can search for something and find what you're looking for. So it takes time to get to that experience. And, you know, day one, we expected more, but we also sort of didn't really know what to expect.
And part of it is also that there isn't much to buy for $5. It's really inexpensive. Like, I'm looking right now at a guy named Arslan who created a minimalist business card design that I can buy, but that costs $9. So even if I had a $5 credit, I'd still have to pay another $4.
Yep, and that was part of the strategy around $5 too. If you give out $10 or $20 or $50 to everybody, then all of a sudden they can just keep living off of that for free, buying everything that they need without needing to get their credit card out. And another thing is, you know, we worked really hard to make this super fast, streamlined purchase process. And part of making that really great is getting people to put in their credit card the first time so that when they come back again, it's just like the Apple App Store. It's two clicks and boom, you've bought it and you're good to go. And now if you hook up your Dropbox account, we'll even instantly sync it to a folder in Dropbox for you so you don't even have to download it afterwards. It just shows up on your computer. And so we spent a lot of time with that, but part of it was just getting people to put in their credit card the first time. So that kind of hooked them in and made repurchasing really, really easy.
Yeah, the form is so simple. I don't even have to put my name into the form. I just have to put my credit card number, expiration date, and CVC. And I'm guessing that's because you have my name already in your system. Yeah, you do. Just looking at the top of the page. And you got that because I wanted the free bundle. I wanted the free, free designs. Here's something else that you did. You created bundles where you packaged $1,000 worth of goods for $39. How were you able to do that with your creators?
So we actually work with them to put together those bundles. So we typically have 10 shops, as we call them, or creators that participate in each one. And we give them all 5% of each sale. So for them, you know, just by saying, yeah, I'll opt my products in, they make thousands of dollars in a week just for participating in this. So for a lot of people, that's really life-changing to be able to do that and, you know, furthers us towards our goal of helping people just make a living just creating these products and selling them on Creative Market.
Did you expire the $5 credit?
So we did at the end of the first year. So we launched in October 2012, and then at the end of December in 2013, we expired that if people hadn't used it.
I see. So it doesn't stay a liability on your books forever.
Yep.
Here's something else that I've seen about that you guys do for getting the word out. You have an affiliate program right at the top of your site. You call it Partners. And if I become a partner and I recommend that people go out and buy something, I'll get 10% of that sale. And for the next year, 10% of anything else that they buy through their account. What percentage of your orders come through that?
It's probably something like 10%. So the affiliate program is great because it enables people to make money even if they're not creating content. And we actually have people that are making thousands of dollars every single month just for referring people to the site. So that's awesome to see. But it's also great for SEO because now people have more incentive to write blog posts about us or link over to content. So there's a lot of benefits there that program, you know, it takes time to scale up something like that and get those backlinks and help people build up their referral base so that they're making a good chunk of money. But we've seen some really great gains since we launched that about a year ago.
What are you doing with Dribbble that's sending so much traffic to you? Is it just that people post on Dribbble and then link over to where they could buy, where people can buy more of their stuff?
Yeah, so Dribbble, those guys are great friends of ours. We actually noticed that a lot of our early sellers and our early buyers were coming from Dribbble. They would create these products for sale on Creative Market, and then they would post them on Dribbble and then link over for people to purchase. And so early on, we discovered that those guys would be a great partner for us and a great source of traffic and revenue. So we've since partnered with them, and now they've built it integrated into the Dribbble site where if you're uploading a product or a shot, as they call it, to show off your work or something that is available for sale, you can actually embed your Creative Market purchase link, and they've added it to the sidebar where it says buy on Creative Market. So that way it draws more attention and it becomes a better channel for people to get kicked over to Creative Market.
I didn't realize that was a partnership directly with them, but of course that makes sense. What about Behance?
So Behance in the early days would link over to us too, but we just don't see quite as much traffic or our shop owners, as we call them, posting a lot of their work on Behance. Behance is really great for kind of long form, in depth, you know, sharing of what you're building. But I think Dribbble's really great because they have this big audience that's constantly checking the site, and it's just this little contained shot where you can show off how great the product that you made looks and works, and then that I think inspires people more to get kicked over and eventually make a purchase.
How long did it take you to hit $1 million in revenue?
We did that on the 1 year anniversary to the day of our launch.
Wow.
So it's October 18th, 2013.
Wow.
Yep.
And then soon after that, or was it on that day that you got a couple of buyout offers?
Yeah, so it was actually 2 weeks later. We had two acquisition offers on the same day. So that was kind of an interesting experience.
How did they come to you?
Yep, so we had been talking with one company for a number of months, just about, you know, partnership kind of stuff or ways that we could work together. And after a number of conversations, we started to feel like there might be an offer coming soon. And so we actually reached out to a bunch of other either partners, people we had worked with, people that we had connections to see if we could drum up any other interest, if anybody else might be a good fit. And so one of those companies actually was Autodesk. And we met with them on a Monday. And we went into that conversation and came out and just felt like this felt very different than a lot of our conversations with the other company. It was more about, you know, we're bringing your whole team. We love what you're doing, rather than like, well, how many people from your team do you really need to come over if, you know, you were to join our company? And so we just had this really great feeling like it was a much better fit after talking with Autodesk. And so 3 days later, it was the Thursday morning, Halloween of 2013, we get the first acquisition offer from the first company that we had been talking to. And to be honest, it was way below our expectations. They were factoring in things like, well, we can have X million dollars for salary for your team over the next 3 years. And they were calling that part of the acquisition price. And they also structured it in a way where, well, X dollars can go back to your investors just to give them their money back. But really, you know, you guys as founders should take most of the money. And so they were kind of playing games with the offer. And so we were not interested in it. So, you know, they talk about entrepreneurship and startups being a roller coaster. And so we get this offer and, hey, somebody, you know, loves us and wants to buy our company. And then we look at it and it's like, oh, this is not interesting at all. And then sure enough, a couple hours later, we get another offer from Autodesk. And it's significantly higher than the one before. And it was just all cash, you know, clean and simple, with really fair terms, we felt like. And so at that point, it just became, are we going to take the Autodesk offer or are we going to keep growing as an independent company? Because we've been growing about 12% month over month revenue at that point.
You've kept the number quiet. I don't even see speculation about how much, but it feels like a small amount. Did you personally become a millionaire from this sale?
Yes.
You did.
It wasn't a small amount.
It wasn't.
I'll say that. Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about it, but yeah, I can just say that it wasn't a small
amount. Was it more than $40 million?
I can't really say.
You can't even say that?
No, I can't.
Why sell? It wasn't. How long had the company been around?
Well, so that's a great question, because Creative Market had been around for, you know, by the time the deal closed in February 2014, it had been around for, say, 15 months, but as we started this conversation, you know, with me and you, my story actually started 15 years ago in my dorm room, and it's been a continuation of that ever since. And it was the same for my co-founders. So to say, you know, we've been doing this for a year or so really doesn't factor in kind of all of the depth of what we had been through. But that wasn't the only factor, too. You know, at the time, we really felt like this valued, built in a lot of future value for where we were at and where the company was going. And ultimately, it's like it's a very personal decision for each of the founders and thinking
what
about.
What was it for you? I remember Alexis Ohanian said the same thing. And at the time, yep. He wasn't ready to talk about it. And then years later, he wrote this blog post about what was going on in his family. And his mother was going through something, I think. And that's why he needed to sell Reddit. Can you talk a little bit about what it was that made you decide to sell? What was going on personally?
Yeah, so personally, I was torn on the decision. It was a very difficult decision. I really believed that the company would be more valuable in a year than it was at that point. And we had had great growth to that point. But at the same time, one of my goals, even since college, was to build and sell a company. And so here I had this opportunity in front of me that, you know, as you just said, would make me a millionaire and bring a lot of stability to my family and our kids and everything like that. And so if I passed up that opportunity and a co-founder got hit by a bus or, you know, something happened with the business where we stopped growing, or, you know, we would have probably raised a large A following that. And if we had done that, then there's the dilution that you have to factor in, and potential exits, you know, become much, much higher, and your potential exit targets become much smaller. So it's a lot of different things where I just kind of felt like, you know, if I didn't have this opportunity again in the future, then I would have a really tough time living with myself about that. And it's hard now with the hindsight of, you know, the companies continue to grow even beyond our expectations, which is really awesome, and largely due in part to the fit. You know, I say that we actually have one of those rare successful acquisitions where the team is really happy continuing to work on the same product, serving the same community, same team.
You're even still around. I know that they required you to stick around, or incentivized you to, but
they incentivized us to, but we're having fun, you know. And my boss within Autodesk, first time I've ever had a boss, by the way, the only thing that he says to me is to just keep growing, and he gives us the resources to do that. And so for me personally, I spent longer than I can remember working 24/7, nights, weekends. I lived, breathed, ate, working and building Color Lovers, Color Schemer, Creative Market. And to now have the freedom where, you know, I don't have to worry about, well, if I don't spend 5 hours working from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. tonight, then the whole team, you know, might lose their jobs.
Right.
You know, I have the comfort where now I can just relax a little bit. And so that's been really valuable for me personally. So I relax in the sense that I don't go 100 miles an hour, but, you know, our team is still working really hard and super passionate about everything that we're building and want to continue to see that succeed. So it's been, you know, a great situation. And I think the team is largely really happy with the way that it's turned out as well.
If you can go back in time and talk to the person who was listening to Mixergy interviews back when you were building the business, what's one piece of advice that you would give that person?
So my favorite quote is, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, and the second best time is now. So you have to start today. You know, it's easy to say like, oh, I'll do this at this point. But every long journey begins with a single step. And so you just have to start putting something out there. When I was building Color Schemer, I always kind of saw it as like a hobby thing, right? Because it wasn't this big scalable thing, but it was making me as an individual a lot of great money. And I met with these lawyers one time, and I said, you know, this is just a hobby until I figure out what the next thing that I want to do is. And they said, well, maybe this could be the thing, you know, that puts your kids through college. And I was like, huh, I hadn't really thought about it like that before. And I was able to, because I had done Color Schemer, trade that up into partnering with Darius and Chris from Color Lovers and merging our company together. And then we were building Color Lovers, and we were able to trade that up into launching the marketplace and building this big marketplace and community around Creative Market. And that was all because I started in my dorm room when a lot of other kids were out partying in Mexico or something like that. And it was just something that I was driven by and passionate about. And so you have to be passionate about what you're working on, because it gets tough, and you run into a lot of shit, and you got to be able to push through that. And if you're not passionate about the product that you're working on and the company that you're building, then it's really easy to just throw your hands in the air and give up and walk away.
The website is creativemarket.com. I think if you're looking for a website, this is not going to really change your bottom line, Aaron. But if somebody needs, and I'm going to speak to my audience, I know you guys sell brushes and PSDs and all kinds of other stuff. But frankly, for us, we sometimes just need a page. A page that just will communicate something really clearly, and we can't hire a designer for it because it's just not worth it. I just need a page for my personal site or to sell something, whatever. Creative Market is such a good shortcut. You go in there, you get the page, you get to make some changes to the HTML, and you can publish it. And if you want to take it a step further, you can also buy the designs and have somebody turn them into HTML pages that or templates that you can use. It's just been such a nice find for us here at Mixergy, and I'm really proud to be one of your customers. And I thank you. You actually suggested yourself for doing this interview. Am I right about that?
Yep.
One of the things that I always
use.
Sorry?
I've been a big fan for a long time, so it's an honor to be on.
Then you remember that for years I used to say I would love for anyone who's listening to build a company based on what they're learning here and then come back years later and teach it, and you just did it. And I'm incredibly grateful to you for doing it. I'm also grateful to April Dykeman for having that pre-interview conversation with you. She's here on the Mixergy team, and she helped me get as much information as possible. Research was also done for this interview by Andrea Schumann, and post will be up on the site thanks to Ari DeSermo, which means that if she gets a headline that you don't like, you can email her directly and say, hey, Ari, can you adjust it? We're going a little too aggressive to get some traffic, Ari, but here's what I think would be better. Ari, thanks for continuing to push the envelope on those headlines and getting us traffic. Thank you all for being a part of Mixergy, and Aaron, thank you for doing this.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.